This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're going to do a program now on the latest issues involving immigration. My guests are immigration law attorneys working for justice by rapid response and legal representation of undocumented immigrants. They are Zachary Nightingale, a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Vanderhoop, Brigliano. Do they get that right? Brigliano and Nightingale in San Francisco. He is also a certified specialist by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Valerie Zukin, attorney coordinator at the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Amid Yazdan Pana, a member of the Iranian American community of Northern California. His office is in Berkeley. And Sarah Izpana, did I do it right, Sarah?
Close. Izapana.
Izapana. Thank you very much. Who is a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. He has a law office in San Francisco. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies four areas, specialization areas nationally in the law. Well, welcome to the program. Very nice to have you. And for those of you who are listening to the program live, we're doing this on Wednesday. It's August 23rd. In a few minutes, I will give you our toll-free number. And if you're listening to the full hour, you'll be able to call in and ask questions. Valerie, if you would, the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco, briefly tell us what's going on here. What is being offered?
Absolutely. So the Justice and Diversity Center is the nonprofit arm of the San Francisco Bar Association. And we're in a great position here due to recent funding that we're able to provide coordination, basically, regarding for various legal representation needs in Northern California, because there are so many different nonprofit agencies involved in contributing to such efforts. We're able to coordinate among various organizations and attorneys providing services to detained and non-detained immigrants in Northern California to provide coordination for the Rapid Response Network as well for the entire Northern California region.
So if you would, Amid, what is Rapid Response? If you would come up here and tell us, what is it?
So currently the Rapid Response Network that's been formed regionally is the Northern California Rapid Immigration Response Network, and the Justice and Diversity Center has been involved with the creation of that network among a number of other organizations. I'm currently serving as the attorney coordinator for that network, and that network has emerged in order to actually respond to the change in enforcement priorities by the Trump administration and to basically ensure due process with regard to the executive branch's activities towards immigrant communities.
If you would do this for us, a rapid response, what does it mean? What practically speaking, what happens?
So in enforcement actions, when you have ICE basically either targeting specific individuals or conducting larger raids against undocumented individuals, oftentimes you have a situation where individuals are picked up and not provided access to legal counsel. That's one of the main goals of our network, is to ensure that individuals do have access to legal counsel, both in terms of understanding their rights, but also ensuring that ICE has accountability in regards to the manner in which it conducts its enforcement actions. Because oftentimes individuals who are picked up in these contexts face significant issues with regards to abuse, constitutional issues that arise, and then also they may be subject to deportation without any opportunity to appear before a judge. And having a third party, whether that's a nonprofit or an attorney, observing proper protocol in these contexts is very important in ensuring due process across the board in these enforcement actions.
Is the Rapid Response Network just something within California and basically the San Francisco Bay Area, or is it something that's becoming a national network?
So the network that I mentioned is actually a regional network here in Northern California. We're actually very happy to serve as sort of an umbrella organization for the local networks. So, mm-hmm. for example, we have local networks emerging here in the East Bay, San Francisco, Santa Clara, Sacramento, all throughout Northern California. And our regional network hopes to not only serve as a resource for these local networks, but to also provide coverage where there are gaps, especially in the Central Valley and other areas that are underserved, to ensure that individuals in these counties that don't have a local network can rely on our regional network to step in.
Is this, I would look in that I'm not an immigration attorney, is this rapid response network, is it something that is developing here in the Bay Area that is a model for the rest of the country or not?
I think that it's becoming a model, and for a lot of us, we're learning as we go, but we're also playing sort of a leadership role, not only within California, but all across the country, because these issues are unfortunately arising all throughout the United States.
Of course, of course. Sarah, you spend a lot of time in the immigration court.
Yes, that's correct.
Let me ask you this. If someone happens to be apprehended by an ICE officer, and this is an undocumented person, if you were there, and this person who, you know, doesn't know, hadn't gone to law school, is probably very afraid of what's going on, etc., but here's an ICE officer, what recommendation would you have for that person in terms of any discussion, any communication with the ICE officer? What should that person do, if anything?
So it depends on where they have been encountered. If an ICE officer were to approach an individual on the street, what we are typically recommending is that you have the right to remain silent. You do not have to speak to an
ICE officer.
This
is our constitutional right, even for someone who's an undocumented immigrant. Is that right?
That is correct. An ICE officer cannot just come up to you and ask you, what is your name? What is your country of origin? Are you here legally or not? You do have the right to remain silent. You do not have to answer those questions. You can even indicate that you don't wish to speak to them. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're talking about they have already been detained and they're at an immigration office, they're being processed by an immigration agent, then if you were to provide information to them, I still recommend to my clients not to provide sufficient information where they can determine your country of nationality, mm-hmm. where they can determine, because once you admit to those facts, they then turn and use those facts against you. So the first thing that I recommend that they do is to ask them to allow them to speak to an attorney, that they have an attorney or they would like to speak to their attorney, and so that they know their rights, that they know that they can have an attorney present if they were to be questioned.
Yes, yes. Well, most people, Zach, most people who are in this situation of being undocumented probably don't know what rights they have at all. So if for example, someone hears what you've just told us, Sarah, so this person says, well, I have a right to remain silent, but Zach, if someone needs an attorney, what do they do next?
Well, it can clearly be very intimidating when you're facing a uniformed ICE officer
having a gun on his or her hip. Yeah.
Right. It's very challenging for anybody in that situation to, even if they're conscious of their rights, remain silent, to actually preserve that and say to the face of an officer, I don't want to answer your questions. And I've had many clients tell me, like, after the fact, yeah, that was a little too difficult, and I just broke down and answered their question. So as a practical matter, it often comes down to the reality that they can remain silent, mm-hmm. but it's very difficult in that situation to do so.
Sure.
If I get the opportunity to talk to a client beforehand, I usually will tell them, you should not sign anything, and you should simply say, and you should not answer any questions, and should simply say, I want to talk to my attorney before I sign anything or answer questions. It's not that I refuse to do it, but I want to talk to an attorney first. And now they may not have an attorney to talk to, but they could at least be allowed to make a phone call to the spouse or to the family member or coworker or somebody who can then say, I'm working on getting this attorney for you. And then the person knows I have an attorney who's going to be you know, contacting mm-hmm. the government on my behalf, and mm-hmm. therefore I will not do anything until I talk to them. That is the safest course of action. And of course, I agree with my fellow panelists that I would recommend doing that.
Yeah.
In the situation where they do end up answering questions, the next most important piece of advice is that they be honest. Because if they are going to answer questions, but they don't answer honestly, that's going to come back to harm them even worse
yeah.
down the line.
Yeah.
So that's a double challenge there. But the ideal thing would be to not answer questions until you get legal advice and understand if it's better to answer questions or better not to answer questions.
In the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, Amid, with respect to the Rapid Response Network, I want to give the website. You correct me if I'm wrong. It's rapid, R-A-P-I-D, response, sfbar.org. It's all one word, rapid response, sfbar.org.
Yeah, so it's actually rapidresponse.sfbar.org.
Oh, I'm sorry, .sfbar.org.
Yes.
Okay. Rapidresponse.sfbar.org.
Yeah, and you can find information about our regional network, and then there's contact information if people have questions about whether or not there's an existing rapid response network in your own area, and we'd be happy to provide that information.
In the Bay Area, with the rapid response network that the San Francisco Bar is involved with and that you, Amit, are involved with, is there a pro bono type of situation, attorneys available in terms of, for example, someone takes the advice of what Zach has just said or Sarah has just said. Is there a pro bono attorneys, Valerie, available in the Bay Area?
There's no guarantee, unfortunately, that
yeah.
there will be pro bono attorneys available. We're doing everything that we can to coordinate response efforts whenever possible. So the best thing to do, if anyone knows of any immigration arrest, is to find out if there's a local network to immediately call the local hotline. And that is the best way to start the process, to try to dispatch pro bono attorneys if they are available.
How do you find out if there's a local network? What would you be looking for? If you had a computer, one of your family members had a computer, what would that person be looking for if you're trying to Google it?
They should Google the name of the city they live in
yeah.
and Rapid Response Network
oh, really?
Or
okay.
RAID Response.
RAID
something
Response,
like that.
R-A-I-D.
Some people refer to it as RAID Response.
RAID, okay.
There has been, you know, in recent years, certainly before the Obama administration, there were some larger scale worksite enforcement actions that were referred to as raids.
Mm-hmm.
Some people refer to any enforcement action as a raid. I think in an effort to not increase unnecessary panic, we try to say enforcement action mm-hmm. and rapid response rather than raid response. But mm-hmm. it's certainly a valid viewpoint to consider every enforcement action
mm-hmm.
a raid.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. By the way, everyone, if you're listening to this program, our program, Your Legal Rights, next week, the live program on August 30th, we will be doing our regular Call a Lawyer night where there will be several attorneys here at the station KLW in the conference room to talk with you off the air from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. You might want to jot down the number. Even those of you who get the recorded half hour, I invite you to call in. If you want to jot down the number, 1-800-525-9917. That's for next week for our regular Call a Lawyer night. For those of you listening to the live program tonight, we will be taking calls in a few minutes off on the air, and that toll-free number, if you'd like to have it, is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Zach, let me turn to you for a moment. California has now, as I understand, legal dispensaries for marijuana. If your doctor or a medical person issues a recommendation for marijuana, I guess there cannot be an actual prescription, but there can be an instruction, go ahead and get some marijuana for your medical issue. What's the situation there? What should someone or some person be concerned about?
Thank you for raising that, because I think this is an area that has a lot of confusion these days. California law has advanced substantially, but the federal immigration law has failed to keep up with those advances. So under immigration law, It follows the federal definition of a controlled substance, and under federal law, marijuana is an illegal controlled substance. So it's very important that anyone who's going to be dealing with the federal immigration system understand that the California law regarding marijuana is completely separate and distinct. So if an immigration officer asks you in the course of a green card interview or a citizenship interview or just about any other circumstance, have you ever committed a crime involving a controlled substance? And your answer is no, because my marijuana use was sanctioned as lawful by the state of California. You have just probably admitted committing a federal drug crime. And under immigration law, you treated as accordingly.
Under federal law, is that a felony, potential felony?
Well, it's usually a felony, but most importantly, even if you're not criminally prosecuted, immigration has a civil consequence, which is you will likely be denied the immigration benefit you're seeking, whether that's residency or citizenship, because you have admitted committing a crime involving an illegal drug, and that admission alone normally precludes you from eligibility for most benefits. So anybody who is going to be applying for citizenship or applying for lawful permanent residence, the most common immigration benefits, should definitely seek legal advice before putting themselves in a situation of having to answer any questions regarding marijuana use or employment in the marijuana industry.
So if you're delivering, if you're driving a truck and you're delivering marijuana from one place to the other, this is another problem.
This is a significant problem if the immigration system will now be considered that you have violated federal law by distributing a controlled substance. Or if you work as the accountant at a dispensary and you're helping that dispensary distribute an illegal drug. There's many versions of this situation that people are lulled into the false sense of security.
Well, let me throw this out to all of you. Most people are finding, and not just people who are undocumented, but to hire an attorney, it's expensive. Most attorneys today, certainly in my experience, I've been a lawyer for a long, long time, a deputy DA of San Mateo County for many, many years, but lawyers are charging $300, $400 an hour. Most people who are undocumented, I would assume, if there are not pro bono attorneys available, can't afford an attorney. So what do they do, Sarah? What do they do then?
Well, unfortunately, one thing that we have been seeing, I mean, it's been happening for a long time, but it is actually coming into light more and more, is that these individuals go and hire what are called notaries or what are called immigration consultants.
Notarios, which is in Spanish language means you are a certified public accountant or something like that, or
correct.
A certified notary or whatever.
Okay. Well, oftentimes in their native countries, a notario is actually an attorney.
An attorney,
and
pardon
so
me.
In immigration court, a lot of the judges do warn that, you know, do not get help from a notario because a notario in this country is not an attorney.
No.
So unfortunately, it's a massive injustice that's being done to the immigrant community because they find that given that they are paying less, they're perhaps getting the same quality of work, and that is obviously not the case. And oftentimes when they do go to an attorney after a notario or an immigration consultant has started a case and potentially has prejudiced the case, the attorney that they've hired now has to perhaps charge more than they would have normally charged initially to represent this individual to correct the wrong that has been done by the immigration consultant.
I know that I, some years ago, had a couple of immigration consultants who hadn't complied with California law, such as putting a notice on in their office, I am not an attorney, I am not a licensed attorney, which I believe is still part of California law. And I brought an unfair business practice action against them to stop them from doing that, and I was able to do it. But apparently it's still doing it, and probably even more now.
They're still doing it even more now, and oftentimes they charge just as much as an attorney.
And that's the danger of it. So what recommendation would you have for someone who's really facing possibly some kind of immigration prosecution or whatever?
If they're unable to to hire an attorney due to their economic status, I highly, highly recommend. There are numerous nonprofit organizations in the Bay Area that do tremendous work. In addition to that, I always recommend the Bar Association. There's a lawyer referral.
Their local Bar Association.
Correct. And mainly, I'm most familiar with the San Francisco Bar Association. Mm-hmm. I believe there's a Marin counterpart as well. And they, for a very low fee, oftentimes they waive the fees, but for possibly $35, they can connect you with an attorney that is trusted. You can obtain a consultation and then determine fees from there. But oftentimes, there are attorneys that are also pro bono through that program, as mm-hmm. well as for low fee cases.
Most counties in California, with minor exception, do have bar associations and lawyer referral panels. And as you say, and with minor exception, for if you are in wherever county you are in, you want to check to see if you have a bar association and a lawyer referral service. And then what you'll find is that for half an hour consultation, hopefully they will have attorneys who are knowledgeable about immigration law, for half an hour consultation, with minor exception in California, you will pay somewhere between $25 to $35. It does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service because it's a great public service. By the way, I've been given this question here. ICE officers are now apprehending suspected undocumented immigrants at the courthouse. Are all undocumented immigrants being targeted for deportation or just those who have committed felonies? Does someone want to respond to that? Valerie?
I can certainly respond
Please,
to that.
Please, if you would.
Most immigrants or most individuals who are apprehended from the criminal system are apprehended by immigration while they are still in criminal custody. So the majority of those individuals, this is a program, the criminal alien program, that's been ongoing for many, many years, since long before the current administration. So that really hasn't changed. What has changed is that now that many jurisdictions are making it more difficult to cooperate, to hold individuals in criminal custody until immigration can pick them up, they are in some places being released, and immigration is sometimes trying to catch people on their way out. Mm-hmm. So this can happen, when you mention courts, so typically, I think some of the concerns that have come up about courts are that people heard, there have been a couple of reports around the country of individuals being arrested when appearing before a civil court or a non-criminal court, or appearing not as the suspect or defendant in the criminal case, but perhaps as a witness or someone seeking civil protection. And there have been a couple of confirmed reports around the country, and there has been a lot of fear incited and a lot of individuals calling concerned, asking, what should I do? I'm afraid to appear in court. Mm-hmm. And it's very concerning that immigration, you know, would use this tactic, which is going to deter people from cooperating with the criminal justice system and deter them from seeking important civil protections to prevent crime, things like domestic violence from occurring. But there have not yet been a great number of reports of it actually happening. So I think to some extent there may be some panic in the communities. So I think that right now the advice is that if you need a civil protective order, you should go and get the civil protective order. Mm-hmm. You should not forego your legal rights. But the best thing to do if you're worried about your status is to seek legal advice as soon as possible, ideally in advance of subjecting yourself to potential encounters with immigration.
So you're talking about spousal abuse, physical spousal abuse, if someone feels that she wants to get some kind of an order to stop her partner, her spouse, or whatever, from doing this. You're talking about that person, are you not, who would like to get some order from court to tell her husband to get out of the house or whatever?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I worry a lot about victims being afraid to use very important legal protections that need to be used to deter these types of things from
happening.
Oh, sure.
If
I could just add, this is indicative of a policy to terrorize undocumented individuals systematically, I might add, from the top down, from the administration down. And what we've seen from reports in the rapid response context is ICE may appear and arrest one or two people in a community, but you literally have families who are afraid to leave their house to purchase groceries in the wake of these raids. And what's of concern for myself, and I think for this generation, is that we have an entire cast of people living in this country who are denied due process systematically, denied access to courts, like you just mentioned, and are living in terror of leaving their houses because of these policies. And the question is, do we want to live in a society that normalizes this behavior, that accepts this behavior, that doesn't provide legal access or guarantees access to counsel for an entire group of population who are already being exploited economically, I might add, because of the lack of status that they have and are normally in a situation where they aren't being properly compensated for their labor and have a host of other issues going on. So I think it's a human issue above all, above being a legal issue for all of us living in the society.
Let me come back to this. The question that was brought into the studio here with regard to ICE in the courthouse. Not too long ago, probably within the last couple of months, the California Chief Justice of the Supreme Court issued a request that ICE officers not go to the courthouses. Has that not been honored by ICE? Valerie, do you know?
I do not believe there have been any confirmed reports of ICE arresting anybody recently. This year, I believe there was one confirmed report in the state. I'm only talking about the state of California. I believe there was one confirmed report in the Los Angeles area this year. I don't know of any other confirmed reports in the state of California.
Really? Okay. So it sounds like maybe there is some progress that has taken place with what the Chief Justice requested be done. Sounds like.
There's no guarantee.
No, of course. No guarantee. There's no guarantee for anything, unfortunately. Well, everybody, this is your legal rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Let me give you our toll-free number, and I'd like you to call in if you have any immigration issues that you'd like to present to my guests. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We will be taking calls from now until 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, so please feel comfortable, if you would, in calling. We do not, from this KLW, we do not trace where you are. And as far as I know, the National Security Agency hasn't tapped in, at least I hope it hasn't. But make a call and ask your question. Don't give your regular number or your regular name, I should say, but feel free in calling in. Let me tell you who my guests are. And they are Sarah Izadpana. I'm sorry.
Okay.
She's a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She's a lawyer, of course, with office in San Francisco. We have Amid Yazdanpana, a member of the Iranian-American community of Northern California. His office is in Berkeley. We have Valerie Zukin, attorney coordinator at the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And last but certainly not least is Zach Nightingale. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Vanderhoot, Brigliano, and Nightingale. Zach is a specialist in immigration and nationality law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. These are very knowledgeable people, so if you have a question, a comment, or something, please, if you are going to try to make a call, do not wait until 10 minutes of 8, because the program will be over. So I would hope that you would feel comfortable enough to call in and make your comment, ask your question, communicate with my guests and myself. Again, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Valerie, I know you wanted to give some different information about where people could get in touch with at least certain either websites or whatever in the Northern California area. Would you like to do that now?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to give out just three of the Bay Area rapid response hotline phone numbers. So if you hear about an immigration arrest happening in one of these locations, the best thing to do is to immediately call the hotline. This is the best way for any attempt for an attorney to try to intervene and at least provide some basic information and try to ensure due process for the person who was arrested. The hotline in San Francisco is 415-200-1548.
Repeat it, would you?
That's 415-200-1548. Then the Alameda County hotline is 510-241-4011. That's 510-241-4011. And I'll also give you the Santa Clara number, which is 917-981-8421. That's 917-981-8421.
Okay, very, very good. And if, for example, someone is listening to the program and is in some other county other than San Francisco, Alameda County, Santa Clara, do you think that there's enough information at this point that if someone, for example, were to call the San Francisco hotline and, let's say, is calling from, let's say, Southern California, to get any information about where to contact the rapid response or whatever in Southern California, or is that not yet quite developed?
The best thing to do is to try to reach out directly to your local hotline.
Okay.
So it would be better to look for a local hotline number.
All right. Very good. Let's do this. Let's start with Tiffany. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi, Tiffany.
So I'm a school teacher in San Francisco, and I have a family that I know that are undocumented parents and three children that were born here. The father was pulled over for a traffic infraction this summer and then was jailed under his illegal status. And the parent came to me recently because her son, who qualifies for special ed and special services, was needing some paperwork to continue those services, but mom was really scared to present herself. And I'm just trying to figure out, because she was scared she would also be deported because the dad is now slated for deportation.
So the mom is undocumented also, Tiffany, is that right?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The mother of the child is also undocumented?
Yeah, both parents are.
Okay.
The father and the mother. So I was just trying to, you know, we do have a school social worker, but I was trying to figure out some other resources that I could support her with. She's just pretty scared to deal with it. They haven't seen the dad in a few months. He got arrested in July, and they haven't been to see him at all because they've been...
What jail is he in, Tiffany?
I think here in the city. I wasn't entirely sure.
In San Francisco
somewhere.
The
second day of school, and she came to me. So, I mean, she's not even in my class this year, so she just kind of came to me.
Let me ask my guest to give you some thoughts in terms of what you might be able to do to help the mother. By the way, Tiffany, before you leave, how long have these two people, the mother and father, how long have they lived in the Bay Area?
Gosh, for over 10 years.
Oh, my. Okay. All right. Turn your radio back up, would you, so you can get some comments from my guest. Who would like to start?
All right. And so I'll hang up.
Yeah.
Is that right? Should
and
I
then
hang
turn
up?
Your radio.
Okay,
yeah.
So
and
much.
Turn your radio back up, if you would. Thank you very much for calling. Who has some comments for her?
I have a couple of comments.
Yeah.
First of all, I just want to mention to everyone who is fortunate enough to be a resident of San Francisco that there is a sanctuary ordinance in place in San Francisco, and that availing yourself of city services should not put you at risk of immigration enforcement action. I'm not sure that that addresses the specific question, but I just wanted to mention that. And there are other statewide protections that are available, and other localities may have similar ordinances. So it's not necessarily the case that somebody would be in danger to help their child access services.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a San Francisco resident, I will provide the phone number for the Lawyer Referral and Information Service at the Bar Association of San Francisco. Even if this individual is unable to find a private attorney through them, which hopefully they would be able to. We also are able to refer them to the nonprofit agencies that can help San Francisco residents. So the number for the Loyal Referral Information Service is 415-989-1611. That's 415-989-1611.
Okay, there you are, Tiffany. I hope you were able to get that, 415-989-1611. Again, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County, which is a fairly new thing in the last few months. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services at the San Francisco Bar, call 415. Now, I have a different number, 415-989-1616 for lawyer referral. The number I have, which I normally give, is 415-989-1616. So let me tell you, Tiffany, if 1611 doesn't work, try 1616. Also, for those of you who may be in San Mateo County, San Mateo County has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. That's area code 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. And the whole point of this is not only for these two lawyer referral services, but with, as I said earlier in the program, for every nearly every county in California has a bar association, a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do the best to find an experienced attorney for you. And for a half an hour consultation, with minor exceptions throughout California, you'll pay somewhere between $25 to $35 for the half an hour. And that money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service as a public service. And it's a really fine thing to have in terms of getting some basic information about what your rights and what your obligations may be. So I hope that is something that you might find helpful. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Now, we have Bradley. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
So, I just have a question for a friend of ours who came to the U.S. on an I-94 with right of abode, so she had a work visa. The visa actually expired in the year 2000, and so she since tried to get that corrected and was issued a tax ID, not a social security number, but an actual tax ID, and has since stayed in the country. So we're wondering what recourse she has to try and get this corrected.
Now, we may have Zach. Do you have some question for him before you respond, Zach, or not?
Well, the problem is immigration law is so technical, the details are so irrational to a normal thinking person that it is really important to, there's too many questions to ask in the short time span that we have to actually comment on this particular question, just as there was for Tiffany's person in the previous question. And it raises a really important point about not being afraid to access legal help and to access the benefits that the system that exists, as Valerie was mentioned, make available to people, whether they're educational benefits or whatnot, because it's so important that people be able to access the system. And there is not always a easy legal solution to people like Bradley's friend, but it doesn't mean there aren't solutions. Mm-hmm. And just like the wife of the person who was arrested and is now afraid to contact the system, it's very difficult sitting here to evaluate whether she would have options or not, but she needs to be able to access the system to evaluate that and figure. And I don't want people to be deterred now or be afraid, despite all the negative actions that the current administration is engaging in, specifically to deter people from accessing the system.
Yeah.
And the message should be that for the vast majority of people, it's better to try to access the system than to stay away from it.
Bradley, where is your friend residing?
I'm not going to disclose that, but it is in California.
Okay, all right. Yeah. You're afraid the NSA is monitoring us. Bradley, also, let me mention something that I think is very important, frankly. And I don't know, and Zach, you may be able to help us on this. You are a certified specialist in immigration law, which is you've jumped a lot of hoops over a lot of hurdles to become that. And have practiced a number of years. And the major funder of my program is the California Board of Legal Specialization. With respect to someone like Bradley's friend, what is the, if that friend wanted to go, whatever county that friend is in, wanted to go to the website, and I'll give that in a minute for the Board of Legal Specialization, do most immigration attorneys, certified specialists, do they charge for an initial consultation? Do you know? Or can you make an appointment for a consultation with a certified specialist and expect that you will not have to pay an initial fee? Do you have any general information on that?
If you're going to a private attorney, yeah. I suspect most of them charge some amount for that initial
yeah.
consultation.
Okay.
What many do is we'll try to screen the potential client to make sure that it's a case they could actually give constructive advice so that you get something for the money you're investing in the consultation.
So how do they screen the client?
They'll ask a series of initial questions, usually 5 or 6 or maybe 8 to 10 initial screening questions, just to determine, is this the kind of case that likely will lead to the ability to obtain an immigration status mm-hmm. or at least get useful information out of the consultation.
Is this a face-to-face basic questions, or can this be done over the phone, generally speaking?
The initial questions are usually done over the phone.
Okay.
The actual consultation, I think, is best face-to-face
yeah.
unless that's not possible.
Bradley, tell your friend. Here, I want to give you, if you'll jot this down for the...
Mm-hmm.
There are 11 specialties that the California Board of Legal Specialization has, including immigration and nationality law. Here's the website, in case you'd like to jot it down. It's www.calbar.ca.gov. And go to the upper left corner of the screen, which shows legal specialist. Click that on. Click on the county in which the person lives, and then find the legal specialization area here, immigration law, and it will list on the website who these attorneys are. And then my thought would be start calling and find out what's involved. I have this problem. What's involved if there's a consultation? What would I be charged? Can I find out whether or not it's even important enough for me to have a consultation? Here's the basic information. So did you get, Bradley, did you get the website?
I've got it, www.calbar.ca.gov.
You got it.
Thank you very much.
You got it. And for those of you who may be listening to the program at some point and not in California, whether you're listening on the Internet, we are live on the Internet at www.kalw.org. If you are not in California, the National Board of Trial Advocacy also has 4 specialties, and you might want to jot down that website. It's www.nbtalawyers.org, NBTA, National Board of Trial Advocates, nbtalawyers.org. All right, thank you, Bradley, for your call. I want to encourage others, if you have questions yourself or your friends are needing help, please join us with your question, your comment. The whole point of this program is to try to give you some education of where you go next. Under the State Bar of California, my guests cannot give specific legal advice. That is not permitted. However, they can give you information of where you go next, and that's what they've been doing at this point. So the toll-free number is 866-798-8255 if you'd like to call in, probably within no less than the next 5 or 6 minutes, because if you wait longer, we're done, unfortunately. But I will tell you this, that We will be doing a follow-up program on immigration law, I believe, in December, and I believe my guests will be turned in, and we don't have a specific date set yet, but they will be turned, at least some of them will be turned in, and I'll let you know about that. But that should be in December. There's a lot to talk about here, and let me do this. Let me turn to you, if I can, Zach, about this. Do undocumented people have due process rights?
Well, yes, they
do. That's under our Constitution, you know.
Under the Constitution.
Due process of law. They do.
The question is how they're able to access
that. Well, that's right.
And one of the problems, as all the speakers have kind of alluded to, is that when you're in a criminal proceeding, you have the right to an attorney appointed for you if you can't afford it.
By the public defender.
Correct.
Or in San Mateo County, it would be the private defender's office.
Correct. But under immigration law, which is civil and not criminal, you don't have the equivalent right to a defense attorney if you're facing deportation or if you're facing the need to deal with immigration. You have to find those resources yourself. And we're lucky enough in the Bay Area and in California to have a very organized support system, which is still organizing itself and growing, but doesn't have the capacity to cover everybody. Mm-hmm. So when individuals have due process rights, they're only able to access those rights if they're really educated as to what the system is, right? And so the first step is understanding that you have the right not to answer questions, right? Or you have the right to get advice from an attorney before you answer questions. But really, it's deciding to make the investment in your future. If you've reached the point that you've decided your life, your future life is with the United States, is with California, or is with this community, it's worth the investment of time, mm-hmm. if you can't find a pro bono attorney, to pay a private attorney to understand, do I have the possibility of obtaining permanent status here, mm-hmm. or defending mm-hmm. my permanent status if I already have it? And that investment in your future will pay off in the long run, because you'll have many, many years of lawful status in front of you.
We certainly hope so. Yeah.
And the administration currently is embarking on a plan to essentially restrict due process rights or find a way to eliminate them, find a way to bypass them by depriving people of the right to a hearing with an immigration judge before they're deported, or using mechanisms in the law that give people fewer opportunities to present their case to a judge. Only by knowing your legal rights, by accessing them through a qualified attorney, probably a specialist in immigration law because it's so technical, will people really be able to vindicate the rights that they have, right? But they're not self-executing.
No.
You need help to make that happen.
Yeah. And frankly, you need to be a good consumer of your rights, someone who feels that you will put yourself forward instead of falling back. It would be my recommendation to people.
You need to know that you have rights,
yeah.
right? And then you need to know, how can I best exercise them, right?
Yeah.
And so getting advice from an attorney about your particular situation is always the best way, right? And try not to give up those rights prematurely is the second best way.
Don't give up. Don't give up. Be a fighter. That's my feeling. Sarah, you do a lot of work in the immigration court. How do you get your clients?
Well, I get most of my clients through referrals from existing clients.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that Zach said that is extremely important is if you're unable to get a pro bono attorney, paying a private attorney is an investment in your future. Yes, perhaps the consultation fee is higher than you'd like, but it's an investment. And if you don't invest in getting the right kind of legal advice, it will harm you. For instance, if you go to a notario, or I don't want to harp on this too much, but
this is very important.
If you do go to a notario or an immigration consultant, they are not going to ask you those 8 or 10 questions that Zach mentioned that to determine if it's even worth having a full-blown consultation for you to come in and pay that fee and have the consultation, because the notario and the immigration consultant is not going to turn a client away. This is money in their pocket, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, they don't have the skill set or they don't have the knowledge that most all of the specialized immigration
attorneys in California.
That is correct.
Let alone certified specialists.
Correct. And they don't have the knowledge, and immigration is such a technical area of the law. Unfortunately, in court, what I've seen a lot recently is, given that we're having such a huge problem with immigration issues, I see attorneys coming from all over, attorneys who do bankruptcy law, and suddenly they're doing immigration defense.
It's a huge injustice.
They don't have the experience. So you need to make sure you have an attorney. If you're uncertain if an individual is an attorney, you can always call your state bar or to confirm that that individual is an attorney in your mm-hmm. state or whatever state that they claim to be. Those are your rights. You have to know. In addition to, I think the first step in finding the right legal advice is to find an attorney, ensure that they're an attorney. You can ask them to show you a bar card, to show them something to prove that they are attorneys,
yes.
because it's invaluable information that you will be getting. It's an investment.
This is being a good consumer of your legal rights. Go ahead, Amit, please.
I just want to say I agree with everything my colleagues just mentioned. I'd like to also just shift some of the burden with regard to some of these policies back on to those of us who do have immigration status here and have the privilege to practice law, but also to question some of the policies that we see in this country, including actually detaining more immigrants than any other country, including the third world, and essentially housing these immigrants in for-profit facilities and essentially creating a system, creating policies which benefit off of the incarceration of undocumented individuals. And I think that we all have a degree of responsibility to challenge these policies, to demand that people have access to counsel, have access to due process. And some people may need to be more proactive about those steps, but some people may unfortunately be denied due process simply because of the color of their skin, the way they look, their last names, and so forth. And I think that there are some larger societal questions that definitely fall on those of us who are privileged enough to be able to be proactive and be empowered to make a change, to take a step, educate ourselves, educate others, and to advocate. Apart from just the legal context, but advocate for policy changes.
Let me give the hotline numbers again in case you didn't get them. And this is for the essentially the Bay Area. In case you are in the Bay Area or you hear this program and you're somewhere else and you want to try to get some direction, here are hotlines that at least you can try. The San Francisco Bar hotline is 415-200-1548, 415-200-1548. For Alameda County, it's area code 510-241-4011, 510-241-4011. For Santa Clara County, it's 917-981-8421, 917-981-8421. You know, it's very interesting when we are doing programs where there are real consequences. For example, I think Bradley's response when I said, well, where does your friend live? And he said, I won't tell you where that is. I mean, he is so concerned about giving information that might lead to his friend that to me, for him to say, I can't tell you what county my friend lives in, but somewhere in California, that's being, to me, and you guys correct me if you're wrong, but here I am. I'm a deputy district attorney. I have been for many, many years in consumer protection. I feel to be overly protective like this is not helpful. Is not helpful at all. So if Bradley had told me, well, my friend lives in San Francisco County, I would have said, just as Valerie had said, here's the hotline. Call the hotline. Or Alameda County or whatever. And if he had said, well, my friend lives in Contra Costa County, I would have told him, have your friend call lawyer referral in Contra Costa County for the Contra Costa County Bar Association. That is one step that you can do to try to help yourself to know what your rights are. Valerie, please.
First, I want to thank you for stating the correct number for the Loyal Referral Service in San Francisco, which is the 415-989-1616 number. And I just want to mention that because the Immigration Court in San Francisco covers everybody who resides in approximately 52 counties, everywhere from Bakersfield up to the Oregon border. Because the court is located in San Francisco, a lot of individuals facing immigration proceedings will benefit from consulting with attorneys in the San Francisco Bay Area. So they are encouraged to call San Francisco attorneys and the Lawyer Referral and Information Service if they're interested in San Francisco attorneys. And I also just want to mention, I agree 100%. People shouldn't be afraid to say what county someone's in, and I worry about the panic a lot. But I also worry about the fact that a lot of people, we're seeing a huge increase in collateral arrests, people that happen to be picked up because they happen to be at the house when someone else is being looked for.
Yeah.
And a huge part of the problem is that people are admitting information they don't have to, they're letting people into their homes they don't have to let in, and they're answering questions that they don't have to answer. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they're scared, but I want them to be empowered to know their rights, that you do not have to open the door unless someone has a warrant signed by a judge, and immigration almost never does. And if you're stopped in the street, before you answer anything, ask, am I free to go? And typically, before you've given any information, unless they were looking for you specifically, they have to say that you are free to go.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, too frequently admit what country they're from, and that gives immigration what they need. And I want to see people not giving that information.
That's
as
very
much as possible.
Very good information, and I hope Bradley, you also heard that in terms of what you might communicate to your friend. Any final thoughts we have about before we have to end the program? Not quite a minute. Sarah, do you have any final thoughts for people?
The final thoughts are just that if you're within the court system, there are always pro bono attorneys there to help. Fortunately, in the San Francisco court system through the Bar Association, they do provide that. So mm-hmm. always make sure you reach out to a volunteer attorney if you're not represented for that day.
Zach?
I think we're seeing the widening of immigration enforcement, not just in the big cities, but also in the rural counties that previously didn't have a big immigration enforcement action. Mm-hmm. And perhaps Bradley's friend lives in a smaller
yeah.
county where anonymity is not guaranteed. And as a result, as was mentioned, because the court and the immigration system is in San Francisco, you probably want to look for a big city attorney who's familiar with that aspect of immigration law, which previously would not have made its way into the more rural areas.
Very good point. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and I look forward to your coming back in December, and we'll talk about a date for that. Immigration attorneys working for justice by rapid response and legal representation have been Zachary Nightingale, certified specialist in immigration and nationality law. Valerie Zukin, who is the coordinator at the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Amid Yazdan Pana, member of the Iranian American Community of Northern California. And Sarah Izpana. Izdan Pana, I'm so sorry. A member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Thank you very much. You've been great and very fine information. So thank you very much for joining us. Next time on Your Legal Rights, that's next week, we'll be focusing on implicit bias equaling discrimination in the workplace. My guest will be Allison Elgart, legal director at the Equal Justice Society, representing employees, Chuck Thompson, an attorney representing management, and Tom Lenz, vice chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Also, for those of you listening to the live program on August 30th, it's our monthly Call a Lawyer Night for you to talk with attorneys off the air from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time at 800-525-9917. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this program has been provided by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Board of Legal Specialization, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks for listening to Your Legal Rights on your public radio station. I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.